RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
All right, yesterday morning I was going to play some clips that came out yesterday after the weekend from Tane Webster of RCR. He attended the New Zealand Free Speech Union AGM at the Viaduct over the weekend in Auckland. And we snookered ourselves for time, but I'm kind of pleased we did that because then we thought, let's get Tane on and he can tell us about the event and what it was kind of like, the gathering of free speech minds in New Zealand, let's say in one place, and then we can hear some of those clips. So Tane, thanks for coming on this morning.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, so it was a great event. On Saturday, I attended the, as you said, Free Speech Union's AGM, once-a-year event at the Auckland Viaduct Event Centre. It's a great venue. It was a great lineup. Saw a lot of RCR people, you know, people wearing our merch, people who knew me from RCR, people who knew other RCR people there, lots of RCR guests in attendance. I mean, obviously, Peter Williams, also a fellow RCR contributor, was the MC of the event. Janet Dixon was there, Grant Schofield. So many of those sorts of people that we've had on RCR. So it was sort of a gathering of friends in a sense.
What was the feeling amongst those gathered? Is free speech threatened in their minds? What's the level of vigilance that they've been talking about? All those things. And, of course, now Trump.
Yeah, so I think along with a lot of other issues in New Zealand, people do feel more optimistic since the election last year, but they're also very legitimately concerned about, a myriad of other free speech issues and hate speech threats and looking overseas, for example, to Australia at what's happening there and thinking, you know, is that what's up next for New Zealand? For example, the social media ban for under 16s, the Australian misinformation bill. So yeah, it was a pleasant event. People are in good spirits, but obviously everyone knows that we have to remain vigilant. We have to keep proactive in order to build a society that we want, a society that, you know, respects and values free speech.
Yeah, I didn't mention Australia there. Good point. So, what was the sort of discourse regarding what's been going through the Australian Parliament last week?
It wasn't really discussed that much in terms of the, you know, proceedings of their AGM. That, you know, they were mainly focused on New Zealand. But I did ask the CEO of the Free Speech Union, Jonathan Ayling. So maybe one of the clips that you can play later on was, it's also available on our social media, was about the under 16 social media ban. And Jonathan, it's probably best people just listen to his answer, but he sort of. They don't have an official position on it at this point in time, to cut it short, but they can see the concern. And, Christopher Luxon, the Prime Minister, he did say that he was open to looking into it, I believe, on Friday. That was in a ZB interview. So, you know, these things are not just over there and out of sight, out of mind. It's, you know, they could happen here as well. But with the...
So Luxon's into considering the same here. Is that what you mean?
That's what the article I saw on Friday
right.
evening
gotcha.
Said, yeah.
Okay. Sorry to jump in there. Now, also, there were some guests, and I'm thinking of Nigel Biggar, retired Anglican priest, professor of moral and pastoral theory he was. That's interesting. He is now, I think, on the board of the UK Free Speech Union. You chatted to him. He seemed like quite an interesting character to talk to. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, exactly. He was a very interesting character to talk to. So former professor at Oxford. His latest book, that's one of the things he was there to speak about, is called Colonialism, A Moral Reckoning. It's just so important to have people of that stature and influence come to New Zealand to speak about these important and, in some people's view, controversial issues. And because that's what creates the ripple effect and starts to push the Overton window and, you know, explores, you know, new ideas and new perspectives that can now be discussed by more people in New Zealand. And he spoke about the British Empire and how, you know, this is not just a story of, you know, simplistic story of villains and victims. You know, there was wrongs done, but there was also lots of good. And the kind of one-sided view that's being taught across the Anglosphere, you know, in particular New Zealand, Australia, and Canada, et cetera, United States, it is unfair, and it's lowering a sort of, you know, I would say, and I think he would agree, it's kind of lowering a cultural and ethnic self-confidence across the West. And so it's affecting the stability of society when all the children and adults are looking back negatively on their ancestors. The children think that have, you know, white skin think that their ancestors were villains. These have profound effects, flow-on effects into society. And, you know, he is one of many very intelligent people raising the alarm bells on this. So it was great to have him come to New Zealand, and Simon O'Connor interviewed him last week. So there's like a 35-minute interview with Simon, and I did a 2.5-minute interview with him, which is worth listening to as well.
Well, we've got a clip of that, so maybe that's the first clip we play from those that you talk with over the, that day, that Saturday. So what struck you about Nigel Biggar? I mean, obviously, intellectually, he's thought this through very well, and it's nice to not feel too guilty about our ancestors, I'd have to say, because that's what that does, right? It induces a sense of guilt in people, which is not very healthy.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, it was, say, the British Empire is kind of the focus there, but it ends up spilling into just general white guilt. And, you know, whether someone's ancestors were, you know, Croatian or Slovenian or something, they kind of, it just extends into this great big white guilt complex. And then we end up with some of the things that children are being taught in schools, which people in New Zealand and Australia are thankfully and rightfully speaking up about.
All right, so here's Nigel Biggar.
Here with Professor Nigel Biggar, all the way from the UK. Could you give those watching on social media a brief overview of what you spoke about to the Free Speech Union's AGM today?
Sure. What I said was it's really important that we in Britain and you in New Zealand have a society where it's possible for people freely to express their doubts about and to challenge reigning views about gender, race and colonial history, because if our society has become dominated by false views, then policies and our lives become misshapen. So it's really important we have the opportunity to challenge orthodoxies. And in particular about colonial history, because the story being told about colonial history generally and in New Zealand is that it was nothing but a litany of racism and oppression and exploitation. And it involved all of those things, but it also involved the opposite. I mean, it's not a coincidence that New Zealand is now among the most liberal countries on earth, alongside Australia and Britain and Canada. That's one of the legacies of British colonialism. So my message on that is that the British colonial legacy was mixed, not just bad, but also good, and the whole story needs to be told.
Excellent. And your new book is Colonialism, A Moral Reckoning. Could you give any, you know, comments on why people should read that book?
Yeah. So my book, Colonialism, A Moral Reckoning, tells the whole story of the British Empire from 1550 to 1960, and it shows the reader all the things the empire was, the bad stuff like slavery, and the good stuff like 150 years of the suppression of slavery from Brazil to New Zealand. So it tells the whole story, and the reader will realise just how complicated and fascinating that story is. In the end, I reckon that the British Empire became increasingly humane and liberal, culminating in our common war against Nazi Germany in 1939 to 45. And that's why New Zealanders, young New Zealanders, now lie buried in graves in Suda Bay in Crete, because they followed the call.
So that's Nigel Biggar. Now, we had Jonathan Ayling on last week here, Tane. He mentioned the story of Oliver Joel, the New Plymouth high school student who couldn't say his piece at school, and that at the time became quite well known. So that has obviously been talked about. Jonathan mentioned that last week. We're talking about that. He wasn't there.
Oliver Joel, the New Plymouth Boys High School student, was not at the event,
yep.
But I was able to talk with Jonathan about him. So there's a short clip with an update from Jonathan. And also I've been able to check in with Oliver himself today, and he has agreed to come on RCR later this week. So
it'll be
great
cool
to have him on, won't it?
All right, so here's what Jonathan Ayling had to say about Oliver Joel.
Could you provide an update on the case of Oliver Joel? You've been talking about it on your social media.
Yeah.
The New Plymouth Boys High School student.
Yeah, the Free Speech Union has an entire caseload and legal team that work with them. This isn't kind of the biggest legal case that we've got in right now. But I think it's an important one. It's a very human story of a young man who was in a speech competition finals and was thrown out because the deputy headmaster didn't like his opinions. And it was that clear. We have a transcript where that's what he says. Right. And this is then in comparison to last year, the winner of the same speech competition the year before spoke out on co-governance. I think that is a very legitimate subject to inquire. People can advocate for it and speak out and let their opinions be known. It's very clear, though, that others disagree, and we're quite likely upset to an extent by those opinions. That shouldn't be reason last year to shut down the speaker, and this year the fact that individuals will be upset by kind of the opposite worldview or perspective coming to the fray, that shouldn't be a reason to stop him either. So we were really pleased to continue to support Oliver, and this week we actually invited him to an event that we were holding in Parliament at the podium of truth itself at the Beehive Theatreette there that many of your listeners and viewers will be familiar with. Oliver was invited. We had an event with Professor Nigel Bigger. We had senior cabinet ministers there, and we invited Oliver to come and use that platform to make his speech. And we think this so often is what happens, where people attempt to bring in censorship, and in reality it backfires. It produces the exact opposite response that many people wanted by trying to suppress and oppress opinions.
Right.
Circling back, Tane, to the situation in Australia with the, you know, social media being basically closed off to under 16s and all the implications of digital ID and, I don't know, biometrics and all that could flow from it. I'm wondering, and we'll hear the clip of you talking to Jonathan Ayling about that, but I'm wondering, I'm always curious, are the likes of the FSU kind of where, well, I'd say I'm at, but we're kind of at, where we see this is a real thin end of the wedge, like really seriously see it that way, or for want of a kinder term, are people still waking up to that?
I think it's best we get their answer on that, have them on again to talk about it. But I would say the thing is, you know, getting into topics like digital ID and its implications and where that's coming from and what it could mean for society, it's not really their bread and butter. So, but I think that, you know, the case can be easily made that this is a free speech issue, and it's an issue of children having the ability to hear things. But you can see how people can, you know, articulate the other side, which Jonathan does in the clip that you'll play, because there are already restrictions on some things children, you know, can access. Yeah.
I guess where I was coming from is that it creates an on-ramp to a complete environment of some kind of digital ID in the name of looking after kids, protecting them. And
safety. A lot of these things, you know?
Safety. Safety, exactly. All right, well, let's hear what Jonathan had to say about that.
What is your perspective on the social media ban for under-16s in Australia, and how does this, you know, how they say it's to protect children from online harms, but is this really a slippery slope to restricting freedom of expression, freedom to hear things? Mm. What is your perspective on that?
The Free Speech Union hasn't taken an explicit position on that. We would if that legislation or policy platform were to come to New Zealand.
The thing is, Luxon has said...
He's willing to consider, isn't he?
Yeah, okay.
So we have a mind to it. We haven't finalised it.
Yeah.
I think most of your reasonable listeners and viewers agree that social media is presenting a tectonic shift in the way we're consuming information and the way particularly young people are socialising, forming social relationships. That's major. We need to have a view to that. Equally, you're absolutely right, more and more our information environment is centralized around social media, and the ability to engage with opinions is based in that space. We don't have a position yet. I think there are legitimate arguments on both sides. I would say personally, without having taken a formal position yet, I'm suspicious of the government using its force to take roles on this. Equally though, I don't think it is an explicitly free speech issue. Minors have all sorts of limitations on their speech that we wouldn't accept accept for those that are adults. And we accept that within a society, children, and that's effectively what minors are, under 16-year-olds, need to have more protections than what we say the state can legitimately insist on for adults. So I think there's a conversation to be had there.
All right, Tane, before we hear a final clip, and I think that's Jonathan Ayling on whether Trump is a free speech president or character, or however you want to term it. Is there anything else that stuck out from the weekend's activities that and the discussions and conversations you had that are worth a mention?
Yeah, I just thought I'd quickly go over, you know, the rest of how the event flowed. So there was the, you know, the board chair welcome, keynote speech from obviously Nigel Bigger. Then there were breakout sessions on legal and academia, and then a second set of breakout sessions on politics and media. And finally, there was a formal AGM, which everyone was able to participate in. And then there were some drinks afterwards. And one thing that I found interesting was that when the topic came up, someone commented about how the universities are kind of going in a particular direction that they're unhappy with. What should people do about it? And Paul Goldsmith said, look, I think people got to vote with their feet. And he talked about how, you know, some people are going overseas, you know, to Australia for university. And I thought, whilst that can work for some people, it's not really a, it's not, I mean, how do you solve that problem in New Zealand? Does it mean we need to look into the potential for, say, private universities in New Zealand, ones that challenge the status quo, or is it to do with the university model? And when I was talking in the drinks afterwards with some people in the academic field, they told me about a project in America, which is quite interesting, a university. It's called the University of Austin, Texas, that is a privately funded with $200 million-plus in donations from several billionaires and high-profile figures. And they're trying to, you know, these are people that are frustrated with the, you know, the ideological tilt and diminishing debate at the elite universities over in America. So it's interesting to see, you know, because we often talk about this on RCR, you know, we can critique the current system, but we can also build new things, create new systems, create new institutions. And I just thought that was quite an interesting story. And I've looked it up, you know, since that, since the event, looked up a little bit. And, you know, it's good to see that people are really taking the initiative to that degree over in America. Now, I don't think that could that happen in New Zealand? I don't know. But it would be more difficult here with the just with the numbers required to make something like that happen. But I think it is interesting nonetheless. So, yeah, I think that's yeah. Everything from me. I'm glad to have attended. And yeah, just next time would have been good to do some more interviews, but we ran out of time.
It's always the way, isn't it? You're always running out of time. All right. So let's end up on your question, re-Trump, to Jonathan Ayling. And Tane, thanks for coming on with First Hand Account. Thanks for being there for us.
Thanks, Paul.
Trump's presidential victory, what does this mean for free speech around the West?
Certainly, Trump isn't a free speech candidate. I don't think he's a principled defender of free speech. So it's probably a question that a lot of people have been asking themselves in comparison to other policy perspectives as well, which is worse. And certainly, you look at what the Biden administration offered in terms of overt and quite extensive censorship in collaborations with media platforms. Zuckerberg coming out apologizing, saying he regrets how closely he worked with the Biden administration during the COVID pandemic and the extent to which they went to suppress certain perspectives. The shifts that have occurred from Twitter to X create a very different environment in terms of the media ecosystem, but we did see the government in the United States looking to actively put pressure on those operators. I don't think Trump believes in that principled perspective on free speech either. So hopefully it's more of a question of what he won't do that the others may have done, rather than really investing and reinvigorating the belief and principle of free speech in the United States. Thankfully, we have some amazing counterparts over there, organizations like FIRE, that will hold a principled line. And I think probably, if anything, this current incoming administration will need to be pushed back against. In the same way we've had a change of government here, the issues around free speech change to an extent. extent. This government certainly has taken steps against free speech that we've had to push back and counter, though. And so that's why the value of a principled, impartial advocacy group like ours, like FIRE and others around the world, to hold the critical line of the foundational cornerstone of free speech in these free societies. That's why it's needed.
What kinds of, if any, free speech threats can you think of that could come up in a Trump presidency over the next 4 years, going on those concerns you've got?
It's hard to know how seriously sometimes to take Trump. Certainly based off some of his comments, there is ambiguity around how he might deal with criticism, how he might deal with those that are seeking to hold him to account, the way he perceives the role of the fourth estate. Now, of course, I agree with many others that the fourth estate around the West is not in a strong state. We see a lot of biased coverage and blatant hypocrisy at play there. That doesn't mean we can in any way endorse political actors seeking to impose coercively or censorially on them. And I would say there's a real open question as to whether a Trump administration will value the transparency and accountability that can only occur through the fourth estate playing their role. That's just some examples. Again, the question I think for many is, which is worse? I'll let them make up their minds on that themselves. I certainly have my opinion. We can still absolutely look at where we can be better, though, and we need to hold
the RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.